And let's bring you this story now. Wits University deciding it's going to remove gender prefixes on university communication, which is addressed to students. So let's, in fact, before we take Tish Lumos, who's going to speak to us about this, Greg in Honeydew standing by with a question. And Greg, good afternoon to you. Let's take your question and perhaps we can put that to Tish as we speak to Tish in just a short while.
Anjan, yes, thank you very much. If they're going to do away with gender identification, if I understand your story correctly, what are they going to do about race and age and all that kind of thing on their application forms? I mean, surely that can't come into it either. If they're not going to identify anybody specifically by their gender, then surely they shouldn't identify anybody by their age or by their race as well. And there should be no discrimination at all. I think it's a fantastic idea, but they shouldn't split hairs. They should go all the way now.
All right, that's a very interesting question indeed, Greg. Thank you very much for that. Let's put that question to Tish a little bit later on as we get to finding out exactly what is behind this move by Wits University to remove gender prefixes on university communication addressed to students. The university essentially wants to promote inclusivity for all groups attending the university. Tish Lumos is Program Coordinator of Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Advocacy at Wits. Tish, good afternoon to you. How did this idea come about?
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for having me on your show. When we had engaged with our university population, around 2013, we started thinking creatively around supporting people in our university community who were struggling with factors relating to their gender, their identity expression, and we started thinking about how best we could intervene in certain spaces to make sure that our transgender students and staff members felt most welcomed and respected of her. And in 2016, we started working on some policy in this regard. And then earlier this year, we'd been made aware of requests from some individuals who wanted to change their details. And just to give you a bit of a context, if you are, for argument's sake, a transgender woman, and you are registered to study at Wits.
Yes.
That's fantastic. But for the example of most transgender folk, it would mean that you have, if you are South African citizen, an ID document that would have those digits that specify you're male. Because the experience of changing your gender marker under the provisions of Act 49 of 2003 are so punitive that one can only swap binary genders, and if you do make that change, for example, in the case of a transgender woman who is a student, you would be, you know, subject to wasting for up to years. We have in our, you know, have in our university a case of somebody who has waited a long time, and you know, it's not acceptable. So we've put in a measure to say, firstly, we're removing all titles from individuals in the student body, and that secondly, if you want to specify your title, you can go onto our self-service website and you can pick a title that works for you, Mr., Mrs., Ms., including the gender-neutral title mix. So we've, you know, tried to do away with a system that punishes, that marginalizes, and it's something many people don't think about. You know, you go to the doctor and you get a little form, are you male, are you female? You know, and most people who are cisgender, you know, those who are not transgender, are in a position where you can comfortably do so. We've created a space where it's not the default, so that anybody who wants to define is welcome to define the way they wish to. They're members of our university community, and we welcome and value them immensely. So I just wanted to reply to the question.
Yes, please go ahead.
So, you know, we've been talking about demographic information, you know, your race, your age. And, I mean, ultimately, there are very specific reasons why certain data is collected when one would apply, you know, anyway. And one of the reasons is that, you know, we want to create tangible change, and we can't create tangible change if we don't know what our population looks like or is doing.
Exactly.
So if we say, for example, we're going to only allow people between the ages of, 18 and 20 to, do a course. And people don't specify their age. How are we going to figure that out? Obviously, this is a very hypothetical example. That would never happen in reality. But I'm just saying that these demographic kinds of information assist us in this regard. And, I mean, we do know that some identities are further than others in our fight for fairness and finding spaces which provide equality. Because, my fight as a gender non-conforming transgender person is not the same fight as somebody who is, for example, a cisgender woman. And it's important in order to change, spaces for the reality of people like me. It's important to count people like me.
I do understand the importance of that. I'm just wondering, to go back to that question that that one of our listeners raised, the issue of keeping close tabs on who exactly on the statistics of the student body at Wits University, for example. If you want to ensure, for example, that black women benefit from a particular type of bursary scheme because you feel that they've not been given a chance in the past, and you want to be able to affirmatively ensure that they are given access to bursaries in the future. How do you go about ensuring that if there is a grey area in terms of their gender identity? If a black man comes along and says, well, actually, I identify as a black female and therefore I should qualify for this bursary.
So instances of bursaries and, funding, be it internal or external, are dealt with by another department in the university, so I'm not really qualified to comment on that. But certainly, when companies do have those particular demographics in mind, as I said earlier, it's very specific in many cases to want to right the inequalities of the past and change the demographics of, our generation of graduates.
But Tish, don't you agree that could be a problem? That could raise a serious problem where people who are transitioning are because they're not seen as either a binary opposite of either a male or female, they simply may not qualify for consideration. They simply may be excluded when it comes to particular opportunities like this because, frankly, the university does actually advertise these opportunities in a binary way.
I think that what's important to keep in mind that when we consider people who are trans, in the case that you're referring to, we're only specifically talking about non-binary people.
Yes.
In cases where, we do have binary students, I'm aware of binary students, i.e., those who are transgender, who are male or female, have applied for bursaries, who have received bursaries and continue to receive bursaries. So in that, it's never kind of come across to me as really being a problem. And with regards to non-binary folk, there are several companies that have worked through the office I work in and other offices to offer scholarships specifically for LGBTIQ+ folk. So in that regard, it's never really come across as being a problem.
Okay.
In that we would understand that if a student identifies as a woman, she is a woman. Therefore, she qualifies for example, a bursary or scholarship that is awarded to people of that gender.
And you don't think that could be abused?
I don't, to be honest, because certainly when we talk about creating equal access to funding, there are so many people who are already applying, but when we do speak to specifically, the needs of people who are LGBTIQ+, I think what's important to keep in mind is kind of the social factors that go with that, that so many people who, in these cases, are, for example, transgender, are facing familial abuse, who are facing homelessness, people who are struggling with food security, people who have been abused, who have been raped, and these are individuals who, really do excel academically in the spaces of which I'm aware that they exist, and I have honestly never kind of thought of or being made aware of the possibility of that being used, you know, in such a way that it would be abused.
Just one last thing, sorry to come in there, Tish. I just want to pick up on a thought you shared with us earlier about how difficult it is to have yourself gender reassigned with home affairs once you have decided, once you've gone through the process. Is any careful attention being drawn to this now so that people who have made that transition can actually have their identities altered legally?
So within the provisions of Act 49 of 2003, which is a sex descriptive act, we have provision for somebody to change from one binary gender to another. And that involves taking medical letters to Department of Home Affairs, filling out a form, and then you wait for the process to continue. And, you know, for those that do receive their IV cards, there's generally a significant waiting period. And, you know, we're not talking months, we're talking years. And also an instance of somebody who is non-binary. Act 49, as I've said, is very specifically applicable to people who are transgender women or transgender men, which is great if you are. If you are somebody who's non-binary, there is no, for example, option X or zero or none or other. We don't have that option available legally. Now, we then have a crisis in freedom areas when it does specifically come to supporting your populations. The first would obviously be supporting people who are transgender, who are legally changing their details and are waiting. Because as I said, you know, this process can take a very long time.
Yes.
We've had instances before, you know, if you look at about 3 years ago, there was a case of a transgender woman who went on a hunger strike because her branch of Home Affairs refused to give her an ID. And, you know, this is just one of examples of iterations where these things go wrong.
Yes.
And ultimately, it's not fair for our students to be treated as per what is on their ID book. If you're a transgender woman, I'm really sure that if you're kind of out of the closet, so to speak, you don't want to be referred to as Sir or Mr. You don't want somebody to say to you, here's your test, Mr. X, you know.
Yes.
You don't want to, you know, have your card, your access card, in your hand and it's got the wrong title on it. You don't want to get a correspondence from Vitz. So this is Vitz News of the Day. Okay, you know, good morning, Mr. That is, it really like invisibilizes your experience.
Mm. Definitely. All right. Thank you very much for speaking to us, Tish, and for clearing up some of those issues for us. Tish is the program coordinator, Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Advocacy at Vitz University.